When Max asked me to speak originally, I looked in the calendar and it was the day before Valentine's, and I thought, oh great. I do not want to speak on love. I do not want to speak on dating. I do not want to speak on relationships. That is not what I want to do. But I began to think, and God just really began to pray, and God just began to really show me that in my life, at least, the issue for Valentine's Day, and really for this time of year, and really kind of for my life in general, has been contentment more than it's been anything else. And so I want to share some things with you, just that God has been teaching me, not that I have gotten down pat or anything like that, but some things that God has been teaching me about contentment in our life. And I think it's especially appropriate because it's the day before Valentine's, because, see, if you don't have a date tomorrow, then you're discontent. But if you have a date, then he may not be as creative as you wanted to be, so you're discontent, you know? And if you're real serious with him and he is creative, then you're discontent because you're not engaged. And then if you're engaged, you're discontent because you're not married. And then, as some of the staff wives will tell you, if you're married, then you're discontent because you are married. And so there is an issue here. And I have some examples of that. So contentment, if you're basing it on whether or not you have a date tomorrow or some other things, then you're going to be in trouble. So we want to talk about, what does contentment mean? Jerry Bridges says that contentment is one of the most distinguishing traits of a godly person, because a person who is content has a heart focused on God rather than on possessions or position or power. And if that is true, if it is one of the most distinguishing traits, then we certainly need to build it into our lives. And that's why we want to talk about it tonight. What are some symptoms of being discontent? How do you know if you're discontent? How do you know? A couple of things that are key symptoms is, do you live your life with a mindset of, I'll be happy when? I'll be happy when this series of tests get over. Only problem is another series of tests always comes up. Or I'll be happy when I graduate in May. Or I'll be happy when I get married. Or I'll be happy when anything. If so, then that's a symptom of being discontent. Or there's certain areas of your life that you believe, if only this part was changed, then things would be great. If only I made $200 a month more, things would be great. If only I made a grade point average that's 0.5 better than I did, then things would be great. If there's an area in your life, if only, then this would be great, then that's a symptom of being discontent. A third one is that if every time something happens, if there's always something to criticize instead of something to praise, if your first thought every time something happens to you, or even sometimes, most times things happen to you, is something to criticize rather than something to praise, then you're probably discontent. You know, this goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden, because God had given Adam and Eve the whole garden. They had all these trees, they had everything taken care of them. Their work wasn't even toil. You know, but after they fell, it was called toil, but before it was things that they could enjoy doing, they could do. And instead of focusing on all those things that they had and had been given to them, they looked at the one thing they didn't have and got real discontent. I want that thing. You know, a lot of times in my life, I picture myself instead as like the children of Israel in the wilderness. And I've got wilderness all around me. And I mean, God's provided my needs, but it's manna, you know, and I'm tired of manna bread and manna, all this stuff. And really, that's the enemy, because really I'm in the Garden of Eden. And God's given me all this stuff except the one thing. And I'm wanting to focus on that one thing instead of those things around me. There are a lot of different things that can make us discontent. I want to go through some of these. These may sound familiar to you. Most of them are just examples out of my own life. You may could fill in a lot more. But there are a lot of things besides just being single. One is just your place in life. Are you discontent that you're still in school, or maybe that you're between jobs, or maybe the job that you have you're not very content with? You can be discontent with your place in life. One of them is your grades. You know, I knew all these people in college that they'd make all these A's and one B. And did they focus on the fact that they got all these A's? No, they focus on the fact that they got one B. You know, you can never be satisfied with the grades that you make. And if so, that can be discontentment. We're going to talk about later the difference between just blowing everything off and being content. But there's an issue of discontentment if every time you don't do exactly the perfect grade that you're discontent. Something kind of related to that is with the Olympics. I don't know how many of y'all have had time to watch that. I'm sure you're students, so I'm sure you haven't. But last night, a guy placed fifth in an event that we had never had an American place like in the top 10 in. And they were all excited, and they were like, aren't you excited that you placed fifth as the highest American ever done? And he's like, no, because I wanted a medal. And I understood what he was saying, that, yeah, we have goals. But yet he had done the best he could have done, and he had done the better than anybody else from America had done, and yet he couldn't be content with that. He couldn't be satisfied with it. We can also be discontent about stress in our life. We're always complaining. We always have too much to do. We're always complaining that we're so busy. We're so discontent, you know? But who got you that busy? Just say no to a few things. It's a lot easier just to be discontent, to let our lives get really, really busy, and then just be discontent. When we get out of college, things are going to settle down. And those of you who went on the senior trip, you heard all weekend long, that is not the case. Life will never settle down until you decide to settle it down. So you're always putting off, sometime in the future, things will settle, my life will be better because something else, and one of those is being busy. What about your finances? This is a big one. Materialism. Luke 12:15 says, not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Some of us are never content with how much money we have. We just think one day we're going to be able to buy everything in the world. We're really discontent with our finances. You know, success can also be something we're discontent with. Some of the most bored people in the world are the ones that are successful because they've met all their goals. Now what do we do? So even success can make us discontent. We can be very bored. And then I think this is the time of year that this one is a big one. Direction and guidance for the future. If I just knew what I was going to do with my life, then I'd be content. I used to say that all the time in high school and in college. And kind of really I still do. Because I don't know what to do with my life. But I used to, when I was in high school, my mom said, you know, what you're wanting is for God to give you a five-year plan and you look over it and flip it, make sure it was okay, and send it back stamped approved. And what God did instead was send you a blank sheet of paper, and he wants you to stamp it approved and send it back, and he's going to fill it in every day. See, we don't want that. We want to know exactly what God's going to do for us. It doesn't matter that in Jeremiah 29:11, he promises a hope and a future and not a calamity, a welfare for us. We want to know right now what God's wanting us to do, and if we don't know exactly what that is, then we can get really discontent. And as I said, most of these are out of my life, and that's definitely one in my life. But I think the top three, again, at least in my life, are these. We're not satisfied with ourselves, either with our bodies, our physical appearance, our personality, or our temperament, or maybe even our spiritual gifts. This is something I've really struggled with because, now don't get offended, but I think that being choleric is one of the most least feminine gifts, temperaments that there is. Now, that's just my personal opinion, and I've always been mad at God for making me choleric. It's not fair, you know? I mean, I'm always organized, but I mean, that's not very feminine. Who wants to have that as their temperament, you know? So I had to work on this with God, and I had to come to a point where I was like, yeah, but there may be some guy out there that really wants an organized home. You never know. You see, what I was really focusing on was the negative parts of it instead of the positive parts of it. And I was really discontent. And then my spiritual gifts are administration, leadership, and teaching. Now, we're talking about some really feminine gifts there. Administration, teaching, and leadership. No hospitality, no mercy, you know, none of this stuff. And I got really discontent. I was like, God, what did you do? Why didn't you make me a girl if you're going to give me all these guy things? That's what I would always say. But God really had to take me to a point where I was content with what he had made me to be and who he had made me to be and to find the feminine parts of those gifts and of those temperaments and things. And you need to do that too. Your arguments with God may be totally different, but they're just as invalid as mine were and just as funny now that I think back on it. But at the time, it was a real serious thing. Another thing that we tend to get discontent with is our walk with God. Now, this is a real hard one because around here at the VSU, we really challenge you to walk with God and to memorize Scripture and to spend time with Him every day. But we don't want to challenge you to be discontent always. If you set such high standards for yourself that you'll never reach them, you'll always be discontent, then that's not what Scripture says. 1 Timothy 6:6, this is an important verse. It says, godliness with contentment is gain. Godliness without contentment is not any good. We want to be striving. We want to have a walk with God that's pleasing to God. But we want to be content. We don't want to be discontent all the time with our walk with God. And then the last one is relational status, i.e. being single, but not necessarily that. I have this great poem I have to read to you. Kind of expresses at least what I think about when I think about being discontent, being single. It's called Unknown Man. It says, oh, unknown man, whose rib I am, why don't you come for me? A lonely, homesick rib I am, that would with feathers be. I want to wed, there, now 'tis said. I won't deny and fib. I want my man to come at once and claim his rib. Some men have thought that I'd be theirs, but only for a bit. We found out soon it wouldn't do, we just didn't fit. There's just one place, the only space I'll fit. I will not fib. I want that man to come at once and claim his rib. And don't you sometimes feel a lack, a new rib needed there? It's I. Do come and get me soon before I have gray hair. Come get me, dear. I'm homesick here. I won't and I'll not fib. I want my man to come at once and claim his rib. I like that poem. And a lot of times, that's my story. That's my line. But that is really being discontent if it's not done in a way that's not demanding. We're going to talk about that later. But I say relational status for that instead of singleness because it's not just being single, as I talked about before. There can be just as much discontentment about being married as being single. It's not our circumstances that's going to make us content. So I want us to look and see, what are some myths about contentment? What is the truth about getting? When people challenge you to be content, what do they mean? I think one of the reasons that we struggle being content is because we don't know what's being asked of us. I didn't. That's one of the reasons that I did this study a long time ago. Because I had all these things that I thought were contentment, and I thought, I can't achieve this. And I began to study, and I began to see that the reason I couldn't is because that's not what it was. And in order to study this, we're going to look at Philippians. We're going to look at the life of Paul. I want to read for you a backdrop out of 2 Corinthians, but then I'm going to read from Philippians 4, 11 and 12. You can turn there if you want to. But first, a backdrop to what he says in Philippians is in 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28. And Paul is speaking here. He says, I'm more so talking about some people he's comparing himself with. He says, in far more labors and far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 time I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked, and night and day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers for the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among Paul's brethren. I have been in labor and hardship, through many sleepless nights, and hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And then he adds this on top. Apart from such external things, there's the daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. Like, I'd be really worried about the churches and all that going on in my life, but he does. This is the man that writes over in Philippians 4, verse 11, not that I speak from want, for I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Looking at the book of Philippians, especially in the life of Paul, I want us to look at some things that are myths about contentment and see that they are not true of Paul's life. They are not part of what he's talking about in being content. The first myth is that contentment is a result of perfectionism. When things get perfect, then I'll be content. Paul's life definitely did not reflect that. Things were definitely not perfect in his life. That list in 2 Corinthians shows you that things were far from perfect in his life. He was in prison when he wrote this in Philippians. His circumstances were not exactly perfect. There's two problems with believing that. Believing that when things get perfect, then I'll be happy. There's two problems. One is that things will never get perfect. You get a 4.0 this semester. If I could just have a 4.0, that's great. But then you got to start over next semester, and you got to get a 4.0 again, and it's gone. Things will never get perfect. And if they did get what we thought was perfect, then we'd want something else. Either they're not going to get perfect, or if they get what we define as perfect, then we want something else. The perfect example of this is with me and Valerie Callahan. And I asked her, could I share this with you guys? And I didn't have to tell her what I was talking about. She knew immediately when I was talking about it and said, yes, share that. About a year and a half ago, just after I'd come on staff here, I lived in apartments near them, and they came to see me one afternoon. They lived close enough to walk, and George and Valerie and their little son, Kinston, came over, and it was a beautiful day outside, and it was really fun. They were out for a walk and came to see me and sat in my apartment for a while, And then it got later in the afternoon, and they needed to go back and have supper, and so they left. And I've been sitting there doing my needlepoint and doing some cross-stitch, and when they left, I just got really discontent, and I just thought, this is not fair. Where is my husband to go for a walk with, and where is my little son to entertain me? I don't like this. If I have supper, I have to fix it myself. No one will be here to eat it with me. No one will even know if I don't even eat supper. And yet, here Valerie gets to have this husband that talked to her all the way there and back, and she can have so much fun, and a little boy that's just a trip. If you know Kinston, he is a trip. He's so much fun. And I just thought, this is not fair, God. And I just spent some time really thinking through that with God. Well, I got a phone call from Valerie about 2 hours later, And she said, Denise, I really just need to confess some wrong attitudes towards you this afternoon. She said, I came over and you had this cute little apartment that everything stayed where before you put it all the time. You didn't have a husband and a little boy to mess it up. She said, it's always quiet when you want to be quiet. You don't have people around. And she said, you know, I had to go home and leave what I was doing and go cook supper for these two. You could have not even eaten if you didn't want to, and it didn't really matter. I'm serious. This happened. And she said, you know, I can't remember the last time I just sat and cross-stitched. I was so jealous of you this afternoon. And I just started laughing. And she's like, what are you laughing at? And I shared with her what my reaction had been. And we both just confessed our sin to the Lord that we had just, instead of looking at the things God had put in our life, we just continued to look at things that God had put in other people's lives. But it really showed me all over again that contentment does not come from our circumstances. It does not come when things get perfect, because we have to choose to be content in the circumstances that are around us as we go along. And it's not going to be an easier choice once I get married to choose to be content in that. So contentment instead with what Paul did, the truth is that contentment must live above the circumstances. Paul says, I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. His contentment did not depend on the circumstances. The second thing is, the second myth about contentment is some people think that contentment is just positive thinking. But contentment is not just positive thinking. Some people think that you just have to deny your feelings. Just pretend that everything's like we desire. I don't really like nice clothes anyway, or I don't want any CDs. What are those things for? Or I don't want to be married. That's what they think that contentment means, denying your feelings. And that is not what contentment means. You do not see Paul in here saying, prison is wonderful, the food is great, you should come visit me, my view is great. You don't see that in here. That's not what Paul's talking about. And if we try to convince ourselves of that, then we're really going to be psychologically unhealthy. Instead, contentment recognizes the negative and unpleasant things in life, but chooses to focus on God. It recognizes the negative, does not deny it, but it chooses to focus on God. And the third one, kind of related to this, is that contentment is the same as happiness. That's what a lot of people think. Contentment is the same as being happy. If you're happy all the time, then you're content all the time. You never should be sad, you never should be lonely, you never should be frustrated, or you're not content. That also is not reflected in Paul's life here. There are definitely times that he was lonely. I mean, I'm sure when he was shipwrecked all those times or anything, he was not just this life of the party having a ball. But he had learned to be content. So obviously there had to be two different things. He talks over and over again in this chapter about joy, about rejoicing in what God's doing in his life. But you don't necessarily see him being just bubbly happy all the time. They're not the same thing. A fourth myth about contentment is that contentment is passive. You just kind of muddle through life and do what you got to do because nothing's going to change anyway, and whatever happens is going to happen, and I'm just going to be fat and ugly the rest of my life. Okay? That is not what contentment is. Contentment is not just sitting back and letting whatever happen and just accepting it. There's a total difference. This is especially crucial in our walk with God. Contentment is a balance between relaxing in God's control and responding with active obedience. Contentment is a balance between relaxing in God's control and yet responding with active obedience. Something that might help you kind of get a handle on this, if you're having discontentment in your time with God, is to think through that balance there, relaxing in His control and being actively obedient. Something that Chuck Swindoll says, and I thought this is a neat way of putting it, so I'm going to read the whole thing to you, but just think about your life. Taking into consideration the experiences, exposure, challenges God has placed in your life over the last few years, and realizing how deeply sinful and weak you are, such that even desiring to be obedient requires much energy, much less than carrying out His desire. Based on that, are you where you should be as far along as you knew, as He knew you would be? That's the question. It's not, am I Elizabeth Elliot yet or Billy Graham? It's based on what God's put in your life. Have you responded the most obedient that you could, knowing that you are a sinful, wicked person that God is regenerating, and are as being obedient as you can be to what He's telling you to do? Now, I'm not building in excuses for mediocrity. I'm not building excuses to just do whatever. But I think there's a sense that we need to relax in God's control and to know that He didn't expect you to be Hudson Taylor by the time you're 20. He doesn't expect you to ever be Hudson Taylor. He wants you to be who you are. And He wants to use the unique experiences and the unique things He's done in your life to grow you to be the godly man or the godly woman that He's designed you to be and no more. So we don't have to be discontent about that. We don't just sit on our hands and do nothing. But as we obey, we can be content and know that He is satisfied and He's not nearly the rush that we're in sometimes. Okay, the fifth thing is, contentment means deeply desiring your situation to remain exactly as it is. Now, I got this a lot with being single. I always thought that when I said that I was content being single, that meant that I convinced myself I never want to get married. And I just was like, how do you do that, you know? I don't think we see this in Paul either. In 4:1, he says, therefore, my beloved brethren, whom I long to see, my joy and crown. Now, he's writing to the Philippians who live in Philippi, a long way from here. So, and he's longing to see them. Do you think he's hoping they'll all go get in the church bus and make a field trip and come see him? I don't think so. I think he's wanting to go see them, which means he's wanting out of prison, right? He's not necessarily saying, I love prison, I want to stay here the rest of my life. He's saying all along, I want to come see you as soon as I can. So contentment is not necessarily hoping things will stay exactly as they are. They're not hoping that you'll stay in school forever. I do hope that you don't hope that you're going to stay in school forever. They're not hoping that you'll be poor forever necessarily. And they're certainly not hoping that you'll be single forever. Contentment is not desiring your situation to remain just like it is. It's not an absence of desires, but a way of dealing with them. It's the acceptance of His answer and walking in that, whatever you're asking Him to do. But that acceptance has space for continuing to ask for another solution, while at the same time an accompanying peace that means I'll accept whatever God decides. It means being able to continue to ask for things to change, but being willing for them to stay as they are as long as God wants them to. And then the sixth thing, and this is the one that I probably counsel through the most with girls. It's kind of funny. But you know, there's this big fear of, if I really get content, then God will leave me just like I am. If I really get content with not being married, then He'll never let me get married. Have you ever thought that before? If I ever get content without wanting more money, then He'll never give me any more money. But you see, the problem with that is, what kind of God do you serve? There's either one of two things. You have a God that doesn't have very many resources. You know, if He looks down and He's got 10 husbands over here and there's 11 girls that want Him. Well, one of them's kind of content, so we'll leave her alone and we'll give Him to the other 10. That's not the kind of God we have. We've got a God that can provide for all of His children. You know, it's not like He's got $5,000 over here and there's 6 businessmen that are working real hard, but one of them doesn't really care. He's content. He said, oh, it's okay, God, to be like I am. So I'm so glad I don't have to bless him. I'll bless these other 5 and we'll be okay. That's not the kind of God we have. We have the kind of God that owns the cattle on a 1,000 hills. In Psalm 84:11, He promises no good thing does He withhold from those who walk uprightly. Not from those who walk uprightly and beg me to death about it. Psalm 37:4 says, delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of His heart. It doesn't say, it says to delight yourself in Him, to be content in Him. And He'll give you the desires of your heart. You don't have to be afraid. If I do this, He'll never let me have these things. In direction, that's one of the big things about when I was finishing college, I thought, I've got to know, if God doesn't really see how much I'm panicking here, He'll never tell me where I'm going to go. He'll never tell me what He wants me to do. Now, that was so stupid because His Word says, in Psalm 31:3, it says, for thy name's sake, for God's name's sake, thou wilt lead me and guide me. God leads us for His sake, not for ours. He wants His purposes accomplished a lot more than we do. Psalm 23:3, the chapter that everybody's memorized, Psalm 23, He guides me in paths of righteousness. For whose name's sake? For His name's sake. We don't have to be afraid that if we quit begging Him for direction or that we get content where we are and just waiting on that He won't tell us. He wants to tell us more than we want to know if we'll just be content in Him. And in this last one, we see kind of the root of discontentment. See, the root of all of that, of being afraid, is really a questioning of the goodness of God. Is my God really good? Or if I get content, is He just going to leave me that way? Or is my God really good? Does He really want to give me good things? I don't know that He does, and I'm real discontent because He hadn't given me very many good things so far. That's the questioning of the goodness of God. We see it with Satan in the garden. He was telling Adam and Eve, He's not going to do that. Why would He have kept, if He really loved you, why would He keep this tree from you? You see it with Satan in the temptations of Jesus. If He loved you, would He stick you out in the wilderness for 40 days and make you starve to death? Turn these rocks into stone. Forget Him. all the way through. You see it even in Satan's own downfall. He wanted the power and the glory that only God could do. Didn't think God was good enough. He wanted to have it for himself. So what is contentment? Basically, based on all this, contentment is the lack of demanding that things change, and instead of focusing on God's provision, on today rather than yesterday or tomorrow. It's a lack of demanding that things change, a focusing on God's provision, and a focusing on today, not yesterday or tomorrow. We're going to talk about those more specifically. But we need to look again at Philippians 4:11. It says, not that I speak from all, for I have learned to be content. This is something that you must learn to do. And so I want to give you some real practical advice on maybe how to learn to put this into your life, how to get these things into your life. I would say the first thing you need to do is to be honest with God. Paul didn't pretend all these bad things hadn't happened to him. He wrote it down in a letter that got kept for 2,000 years. You need to be honest with God about what you're feeling, about what your desires are, about what your hopes are, and about how you're struggling. It's very unhealthy emotionally to pretend that everything is always grand when you're not. You need to release those desires to him and choose not to demand them. So the first thing would be to be honest with God. You don't have to pretend anymore that you really don't want to get married. You don't have to pretend that anymore. You can be honest with God. The second thing I would say to do is to pray for contentment. See, this is something that these verses were all linked together. They didn't have the little verses like we have now. These all flow together. I've learned to be content. And 13 says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I think that that's the secret of being content that he's talking about. You can do it, but only through Christ who strengthens you. You cannot do it on your own. See, I can get up here and we can talk about being content and stuff. And you can go out of here and you can say, I should be content. I should be content. And instead of getting content, you're going to get more guilty. I should be content. And guilt is not going to help you. Guilt is going to hurt you. Instead, you can take it and before the Lord say, will you help me? This is something I really have as a goal. It's two totally different things. And if you leave here tonight feeling worse about yourself and feeling more discontent, you've missed my heart because that is not what I want you to do. But if you leave out of here and try to talk yourself into it and do it yourself, you've missed God's heart, and that's not what he wants you to do. He wants to help you, but you need to ask him for it. The third thing you need to do is to live your life rooted in the present. Philippians 3:13 says, most of you could probably quote this, brethren, I do not regard myself as laying hold of it, yet one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind me, reaching forward what lies ahead, I press on today. He's working today on the things that are going to get him to that goal, forgetting tomorrow and not living forgetting the past and not living in tomorrow, pressing on today. We need to live rooted in the present. You see, God has not given me the grace to be single when I'm 40, but he has given me the grace to be single when I'm 28. And if I try to live and try to figure out how I'm going to possibly make it, when I was 23, if I'd have known I was going to be single when I was 28, I don't think I'd have liked that too much. Because when I was 23, God had not given me the grace for it. But now that I'm 28, he has. He has tremendously. And I don't have to worry about it. In Matthew 6:34, it says, don't be anxious for tomorrow. Today has enough cares of its own. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Live today. And part of that living today is to find out those things you can change and change them and accept the things that you can't. If you're discontent with your physical appearance or with your temperament or with who you are, find out those things that you can work on and work on them. And find out those things you can't and give them over to God and quit demanding that he change them. But live today. Live today like it's today. Your life does not begin when you're out of college. Your life began a long time ago. And you can be living it to the fullest right now. The fourth thing I would say is to avoid those things that you know will make you discontent. Now, that's an easy one, but it's a hard one to do. Avoid those things that you know will make you discontent. Philippians 4:8 says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is good repute, if there's any excellence, anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. I think contained in that passage is to let your mind dwell on these things and not on these things. You need to avoid those things that you know make you discontent. Now, I had a girl tell me one time, but he is all those things, but that doesn't count. Okay, he's not talking about a guy here in this verse. He's talking about his words. But we really can put some things in our life. Now, one of the things in my life, my girls are going to laugh, but one of the things in my life that I've had to avoid is Karen Carpenter's music. Now, I know you're like, that's totally harmless music. You've got to be kidding. I'm not telling you you need, I'm just sharing you a personal example of my life. I've listened to Karen Carpenter since I was in junior high, high school. She has the most gorgeous voice, and there are these great, mellow love songs. But you know, when I start listening to them, I want somebody to sing the song to. I mean, I'm just honest. So one of the things about 5 years ago I had to do was to put aside all my Karen Carpenter albums and not listen to them. And I always joke with my girls, I can't wait to get married so I can listen to Karen Carpenter again, you know? But I'm serious. That is something in my life that I had to build into my life to avoid those things that made me discontent. If you don't have very much money, don't go window shopping. Stay away from the malls. All you're going to see is all the things that you can't have, and you're going to get more and more discontent. Don't apply for more credit cards, because then you're going to want to use them, right? Avoid those things that make you discontent. It sounds easy, but it's hard. But you know those things in your life that bring to mind again those things that make you discontent. And if you really want to be content, then I would say avoid those things. The fifth thing would be to stop comparing yourself with other people. Now, besides the fact that this is a biblical, you're not supposed to compare yourself with other people, there are two practical reasons for not doing that. One is that each of us deserves hell. See, when we compare ourselves to other people, you're like, I deserve that as much as they do. But you don't. None of us do. One of the passages in Matthew that's really the most uncomfortable for me is Matthew 20:1 through 16. It's a parable that Jesus gives about these workers. And some of the guys go out and they start working first thing in the morning. And they agree that they're going to get paid a denarius for their day's work. Some other guys come along about 9 o'clock and they start working. Some other guys come along about 11 o'clock and they start working. All through the day. Even about 4:30 when they're getting off at 5, some people come and start working. Well, then when the master comes, he pays them all a denarius. Now, what do you think the guys that started at 8 o'clock that morning do? What would you do? If you start at 8 o'clock that morning, got paid the same thing as somebody started at 4:30. That's not fair. I worked a lot harder than they did. I mean, that's me. I don't like this parable. It convicts me much too much. But you see, what does he say? Jesus says, the owner of the field says, take what is yours and go your way, but I wish to give this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Who are we to tell God who he can bless and who he can't? Because see, those guys that started first thing in the morning, they made an agreement how much they would be owed and how much they'd be willing to work for. And that's all that was owed them. If these other guys hadn't come along, they wouldn't have felt like that they were owed anymore. Because other guys came along and got a little bit, what they thought was a little bit more for less work, that they got upset about it. See, when we start comparing to other people, then we forget that we're getting a lot more than what we deserve. Even if we're getting less than what somebody else is getting, what we think anyway, we're getting a lot more than what we deserve. The second thing is that we always compare ourselves with people who have more than we do. Have you ever noticed that before? You always compare yourself with people that have more than you do. I challenge you, if this is something you can't, I challenge you to get out of your life. Stop comparing yourself to other people. But if you have to, then I would challenge you to compare yourself to a missionary couple named Don and Helen McNeely. We got a letter on this in Stephanie this past week. The apartment that they live in gets up to 53 degrees. That's the warmest it gets. It's 8 degrees below zero. Their heat goes off, their whole electricity goes off twice a day for 2 hours. And so then the heat, it's even colder than that there. Their list of rations for the month sounds like something your mom would send you to at Christmas, the things she forgot at the grocery store. And this is all their food for the whole month. So we always compare ourselves with people a lot better than us, or what we think, the parts that we see in you better. But we don't need to do that. We don't need to compare with people that have more than we do. The sixth thing is we need to choose to focus on the benefits of the situation that we're in. Choose to focus on the benefits. I think this is one of the keys to why Paul could be content. If you look back in Philippians 1:12, he's talking about being in prison. He's not saying, I love being in prison. He's not saying prison food is great. He's not saying the view is wonderful. But he is saying there are some good things coming out of this. He says, now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the Praetorian Guard and to everyone else. And he goes on to explain, a lot of the brothers are gaining courage because he's in there. And even the ones that are preaching falsely, still the name of Christ is being named, and so that the gospel is being furthered here. He began to focus on the benefits of the situation and keep those before him rather than on the bad things about the situation. What are the things in your life that are benefits of your situation? if you're still in school, one of the benefits is that you still have lots of contacts and you're around the dorms and all, and you have lots of free time, even though I know you don't think you do, but lots of free time to be able to invest in some people's lives. You have the ability to be in a ministry like this one that you're not going to have when you get out. There are a lot of benefits to your place in life right now. Whatever it is you're struggling with, what are the benefits there? Try to focus on those instead of on the things that you're lacking or you think you're lacking. Seventh is to develop a grateful heart for all that God has surrounded you with. And this goes back to the Garden of Eden syndrome. Look at the things around you and be grateful for those things rather than focusing on the few things that you don't have. Jim Elliot says, let not our longing slay the appetite of our living. We can be so focused on this one or two things we don't have that we don't enjoy all the things that we do have. We can be so focused on that this guy is not asking us out as a date that we don't realize that he sure is a good friend. I am so glad that God's given me such a godly friend like this. And we can lose that whole friendship trying to make it more than God wants it to be instead of really enjoying what God does want. And then the last one is to determine to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. Focus on who God is and what He's wanting to do in your life. There are a lot of things to be said under that. Philippians 3:8 says that not only did He focus on those things, but He counted all the other things as rubbish in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus our Lord. If our main goal is to know Christ, and the desire to be His and make Him our all in all, then all those other things will fall in, and we won't be discontent with all the other things that are not there. Let them all fall behind us and be content on Him. Let Him meet our needs however He chooses to. And that's really hard. God has met my needs in tremendous ways the last 28 years of my life. Sometimes not in ways that I wanted Him to, but always in ways much better than I thought He could. He always has a solution that when I let Him bring it into my life, is so much better than I thought, so much better than what my solution would have been. And as I continue to put Him first, knowing Him, seeking His kingdom, seeking His ministry, then He's surrounded my life with good things, and I've been able to receive those good things instead of focusing on the few things that I think I haven't received.